As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. I'm Dan Bardell, and each and every Friday, myself and George Ellick will preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action alongside Bet365's Steve Free. On this week's show, a proper test of Arsenal's resurgence and what on earth was in those sources that Conte has banned from Spurs' training ground as Harry Kane whacks in four against San Marino and could be back on form now. Before we do get to the weekend's action, let's just pause to talk about last week's show, because Steve, I believe there's been some movement since we tried to pick our England squad for the World Cup next year. I don't think it's because of us, but there's been some movement.
Smith Rowe, of course, is the one that's moved a little bit, of course, into 6-5, a man in form. His new diet is working wonders. Maybe I should ditch the takeaways and chocolate like him as well to produce these type of performances. But he's been the main mover in the in that market, Dan. I mean, you know, you were talking last week, you know, England could possibly drop points. And I was kind of saying, don't be ridiculous. You know, there were 750 to 1 on, George. It just wasn't going
to
happen.
Listen to you, Steve. You're crowing about backing a 750 to 1 on shot winner, aren't you? Now that's all you're doing. So
listen, pal. When you're in such bad form as me, you'll take any single winner you can get. I mean, it was 22 to 1, guys, for a 10-0 victory as well against San Marino, and England are into 7 to 1 now to win the World Cup. So and let's hope they're joined by a few more home nations as well. So all good fun.
Who's the favourites now? Because a few of the bigger nations are, you know, not guaranteed to be. Then I think of Italy and their struggles.
It's a fascinating heat. I mean, France and Brazil are both 6-1 joint favourites, with Spain at 8, Italy out to 10, the same price as Argentina and Germany, Belgium at 12, Netherlands at 16, Portugal out to 20. So quite a competitive heat, Dan. Yeah, so long may that continue.
Yeah. Did you manage to get any of the tips that I wanted putting in? Omar Richards at Bayern Munich, has he made it onto the website yet, Steve?
Yeah, we'll move on, shall we?
Okay, Trader said no.
Did they? Wow.
Too shrewd, Dan. Bardell. He's absolutely everywhere. We can't get him off our screens. Tell him to go and pester somebody else.
I thought that was a decent suggestion. Oh, well. Just before we do get onto the weekend previews, remember you can sign up to The Athletic and save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sports. So that's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. To do that, just head to theathletic.com/footballpod. First game of the weekend then is Leicester versus Chelsea at 12:30, George. And what has been going wrong at Leicester so far this season? To start with, we asked The Athletic's Leicester writer Rob Tanner for his thoughts.
It's been a bit of a troubled season so far for Leicester as they return after the third international break. Last time they came back, they got a morale-boosting win over Man United, and this time the challenge couldn't be tougher with Chelsea visiting the King Power Stadium. The reasons why it's probably been a tough season for them is twofold. It could be the psychological impact of a second season of being in the top four all the way to the bitter end and then dropping out on the final week. I mean, that has to take a psychological toll, and Brendan Rodgers has been trying to lift them and get them going again for a third attempt at Champions League qualification. But I also think the injuries that they've had over the last 18 months or so have started to catch up with this squad. Not only the injuries they had last season going into this season, but the ones they've picked up this season as well. Wesley Fofana picking up that terrible ankle problem against Villarreal. But those injuries start to clear up now, and James Justin could be back soon, which would be a boost for Fofana in the new year. Tielemans picked up a knee problem at Leeds, but that isn't too serious, so he should be back soon. So Rodgers could have, for the first time, a clean bill of health in the second half of the season, and it could really pick up for Leicester then.
Rob Tanner there, absolutely ruining everything that I was going to say, George, because I was going to say about the injuries, I was going to say about the hangover, but he's beating me to it, and now it looks like I'm just copying him.
Yeah, we got Steve after timing a 750-1 on winner, and then we got Dan there claiming he was going to give us all the insight after we've heard it. It's absolutely outrageous.
Oh, really? Start to the pod.
But it's, yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with any of the points raised there. I mean, I think with the hangover, it's always hard to really quantify what that means, because it's one of those things that flags up after a poor start. I mean, I don't necessarily buy into it massively. I think there are positives around maybe not playing Champions League football every week. They are obviously playing in the Europa League. But I think when you look at the personnel, I mean, I was one of the people who was lauding the business of Leicester's over the summer. You know, Patson Daka, he's obviously looked very lively when he's played in Europe. No starts yet in the Premier League. The long-term replacement probably for Jamie Vardy. And Boubakary Soumaré as well, a player who I think a lot was expected of. And you know, he's only 22 years old and he's been okay since he came in. Ademola Lookman, another player who's on the young side. And maybe it was a case of just getting a bit carried away with players who were brought in with long-term aspirations in mind, and it's taking them a little while to settle. There have been issues defensively, obviously. Steve's mentioned many times about Johnny Evans and his absence being a loss. Since he's come back into the side, things haven't got much better. Ryan Bertrand came in as cover at left-back, and you know, he's been okay. He's now out with injuries, but I think the injuries are the key. You know, the Fofana injury has been the most important part of Leicester's defensive frailties in my book. James Justin, of course, is a long-term absentee, but his return to the side, both as a right-back and a left-back option, will be massive if he can continue his form that he showed before the injury. So, and it's also just a classic case of the expectations of Leicester as a football club have been raised because Brendan Rodgers has done such a good job and because they've been consistently good so far. So it's hard to come away with any other thought than that Leicester are not looking so good this season, and there does seem to have been a regression. And I think the form of certain players, you know, I don't think anyone would have anticipated that Harvey Barnes and James Maddison would be peripheral players this season for the most part so far, struggling to find their form. Form is temporary, and we're going to see these guys return to some level fairly soon. But I'm seeing little at the moment to suggest that Leicester are a side poised to move into where they had their pre-season aspirations of being a, you know, a top four challenger.
Kind of victims of their own success a little bit, Steve. You know, think of the wonderful facilities that they've got there, that their new training ground. There was a piece in The Athletic a couple of months ago, you know, their new training ground is something else. Rodgers has done an incredible job there. He's suddenly been linked with the Manchester United job and the Manchester City job. I think there's been some links there for the future as well. So again, this feels like there's just a lot going on and it's not all quite coming together for Leicester at the moment.
No, and I think also a factor, Dan, is the key older players. It's probably a bit of a change in the guard, really, as we talked about. Schmeichel, who's normally great for them, he's second from bottom in the expected goals prevented table. You know, Johnny, of course, he's getting older. Snave. His name's Snave, by the way. His nickname's Snave. And Vardy as well, of course. And as George mentioned, you know, these new younger players still aren't getting regular game time yet. And it's a natural progression for them. You mentioned the top five finishes. Two top five, fifth place finishes, I don't think's bad, quite clearly. I don't think a title challenge again is going to come anytime soon. They've got silverware, FA Cup, Community Shield. I'm not sure what more Brendan Rodgers can really do. I think Leicester City are clearly a fantastic club. Brendan Rodgers has clearly got a fantastic relationship behind the scenes as well with the football club as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if he... it would be tough for him to move on, of course, from Leicester. But they're 12-1 there to finish in the top four. They're 11-4 to finish in the top six. There was so much pre-season I think Leicester were quite ambitious. It felt like Leicester were going to have a real good go for the top four after the close finishes over the last two seasons. And we've seen the wet runs of the teams like West Ham and Arsenal, who are kind of filling those spaces at the moment.
It's a funny one, the links to both Manchester clubs, because in Manchester City, you've got Pep Guardiola, who is doing a great job, has City as title favourites, current holders of the title. And yet there's stories about suddenly emerging in the press about Brendan Rodgers being... being popular amongst those making the decisions at City. And then you've got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United, where, you know, he's being touted as the favourite to take over, stories linking him as meeting the Glazers, when every single bit of correspondence out of the club is that there's no intention of sacking Solskjaer and that his long-term future is secured. Is there any chance it's the other way around? You know, I have no idea. It's pure speculation on my part, but I wonder if it's maybe the other way around.
You know, I think they're probably a little bit annoyed by the emergence of West Ham, Leicester. That's probably taken them a little bit by surprise, because they now look like the big contenders to break into that top four. And they've kind of done it quite quietly. No one expected that from them this season. And, you know, they've got the Europa League as well. So if the Europa League's a distraction for Leicester, I don't think that can...
Yeah.
It's not really a fair thing, because West Ham have got that as well. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Look at Chelsea then. And Steve, you've got a price on Chelsea breaking the clean sheet record.
Yeah, it's quite rare that they conceded a goal. Not only conceded a goal, but conceded a goal from open play against Burnley. So I think Burnley are playing a little bit better now. But so Chelsea were out to 18-1 now to break their own record of conceding 18 or fewer. So the great Mendy was beaten. I think Vidra was the one that put that away. Chelsea clearly, you know, peppered the Burnley goal, 25 shots. I think that's the most they've had without winning a Premier League game at home since 2015. But worryingly, I think 13 of those shots were from defenders, the likes of Chilwell, James, Rudiger, Silva, Christensen, 13 between them. And previously to this game, I think, well, they haven't really missed Lukaku a great deal. I think the one against Burnley, maybe they probably did. The player who everyone's talking about at the moment as well is a certain Reece James, of course, who's thriving for both club and country, and as George will know from watching in the championship, it's no real great surprise to see him kick on. I was just amazed at the time that Paul Cook was able to get hold of Reece James. Quite a brilliant sportsman. Cookie would often talk about in his interviews about being the best at table tennis and
golf. What is he with you today? Johnny, Cookie?
Yeah, two of the best, you know, a bit of Scouse Hube, you know, we love a bit of that, you know, but no, you're right. He hasn't got a clue who I am, you're right. But he was a 19-year-old, you know, low knee at Wigan, and when I used to watch Wigan play in the Championship, you used to see a few managers walk on the pitch afterwards to go and shake hands with the referee and kind of make a beeline for Reece James. So, yeah, what are you doing next season, son? You know, big Championship clubs. Why don't you come and join us next season, pal? I think he was thinking, don't worry, I'm going to be in the Chelsea first team in not too long. And clearly a kid going places.
It's interesting to see how his demeanour's changed since the Wigan days. I interviewed him at the EFL Awards.
Arca George now.
He spent some time with Reece, yeah.
Jamesy.
I've interviewed Cookie as well, so there you go. I mean, he was the same on the pitch at Wigan. He looked almost quite embarrassed by his ability. And interviewing him, he was incredibly polite, but he was very, very shy and very quiet. He's not that anymore at Chelsea. You know, he's a proper character on the pitch. He's somebody who looks, you know, he's happy to get his foot in both, you know, in terms of the game, but also he's not one to shrink in the face of adversity as well. So he's matured massively as a competitor, but as a footballer, you know, he's got absolutely everything in terms of technical ability. His crossing is fantastic. His physicality, his ability to get up and down that right-hand side, his versatility, being able to play on the right side of a three. He could probably play centre-back in a four. He can definitely play holding midfield as well. He's an absolute gem of a player. There aren't many better than him. And I think maybe because England have had such an embarrassment of riches at right-back, it took people a bit by surprise that, you know, I'm not suggesting he's a better player than Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I think what Trent is the best in the world at what he does. But in terms of being an all-round right-back, there are very, very few better than Reece James now.
He's in front of Trent George as well. Yeah, I think he's definitely in front of Trent Alexander-Arnold. I better say his full name. Is he? Trent, I think. Is he, yeah, I think.
Yeah, the river.
TAA. I think he's in front of TAA. And of course, we saw him play in midfield as well for England in midweek, and that would be something that maybe Gareth Southgate could use in the future as well for the country.
I mean, we could have played in midfield for England in midweek, and they would have been okay. I think he's the top Premier League goal scorer for Chelsea at the moment, Reece James. As well,
he is. He's second favourite to be the young player of the year as well, Dan. So
second favourite for the golden boot, then, wasn't easy. Right, and before we move on to the next game, let's get a tip from George.
Yeah, Paul Tierney is the referee here. He's refereed 10 games so far this season in all competitions and given out 35 yellow cards in that time. But if we take out the Moldova-Austria game in the World Cup, which I don't think really counts here, then that's boosted a little bit where there were just two. So I'm looking to side with cards and looking through Bet365's to be shown a card list. There's one that stands out massively, and that's Ben Chilwell at 5-1 to be shown a card. He is going back to Leicester for the first time with fans in the stadium, which is significant. I can't imagine he's going to get a overwhelmingly positive reception. He is facing up against some of the best ball carriers. You know, you think of Leicester's abilities there. It's going to be Lookman and probably Maddison, who he has to take charge of for most of the game, and then Harvey Barnes possibly if he swaps wings, and then of course Jamie Vardy, the man up top as well. If you're looking at fouls committed per 90, Chilwell is top for Chelsea with two fouls committed per 90 as well. So the data, the narrative and the price all piled into one, as well as a referee who's pretty happy to get his yellow cards out. So I think Chilwell 5-1 has to be the value here.
That's a good one. He got a bad reception in the cup final, didn't he? The FA Cup final. There was fans in the stadium for that, and he scored, and he got disallowed in the last minute after he celebrated wildly. So yeah, the Leicester fans not too keen on Chile. Game two is Liverpool v Arsenal, the tea time game. Tasty game at Anfield, that. And you can tell that our producer is an Arsenal fan, because I've got a league table here from the 1st of September onwards. So that's 8 games. We all know the season only started on the 1st of September. And Arsenal atop of that after the last 8 games with 20 points. Chelsea second with 19. Man City with third. Now, I think we were all guilty of laughing at Arsenal quite a lot, especially myself.
Not all of us.
Before the 1st of September. I think we all had a bit of a titter, I would say. But they are genuine top four contenders, I think, now, Steve.
Yeah, big time. Big time. I think the biggest price we've been, Dan, is 12-1 to finish in the top four. Of course, that was after their well-documented slow start to the season. A lot of indifferent performances. Clearly, I think the side that they put out for the Brentford game is now a hell of a lot different to the one that they're able to put out now. And while they're into 130, you know, for the top four, clearly with the way that Manchester United are playing right now, who currently hold the fourth spot there in the betting, you would think that that Arsenal have had a chance to be able to break in there. You would have thought them, West Ham, you know, even further down to Tottenham, you think, well, maybe this could be our season to get in there as well. And it's going to be a great test, you know, to go there and see. I mean, a lot of managers generally, I suppose, when your team has been struggling, have kind of feared the international break. But, you know, that hasn't been the case, has it, with Arteta, who's kind of thrived over the last couple of international breaks as well. They seem to be doing a load of things right, getting a load of positive press. There's a load of talk about their set pieces as well that people are talking about. Yeah, I know everyone's got a set piece coach these days, but the Arsenal one seems to be the lad from the ex-Manchester City set piece coach. He's great. So it'll be a fascinating game at the weekend, and this is one I'm really looking forward to, and probably a test to see how far Arsenal have come over the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, George, where, you know, I'm looking at Arsenal's business in the summer transfer window. I don't think I was quite understanding it, but then when you see them together as an 11 on the pitch, it actually makes complete sense what they're doing.
I mean, it does. And often as fans, we can get very caught up in transfer fees. And obviously beating the market is important if you're a club who is looking to trade players. But I think with Aaron Ramsdale and Ben White, Arsenal were looking to sign two players who they hope will be at the club probably for the next decade. So suddenly a £50 million investment in a centre-back who they want to be the centre-back for that long, the price tag isn't necessarily so important. It doesn't matter as much what the sell-on fee possibly could be, because I'm sure if Ben White has a great 3 years, that fee probably wouldn't go up too much. This feels like the game to me where we're going to learn a lot about both sides, because you know, I've said on this show a few times how it would be unfair really to judge Arsenal too much on the results against City and Chelsea early on in the season, given the injury issues that they had, given the red card to Granit Xhaka as well in the City game. There's no hiding now. There's no hiding place from here. As you say, that you know, they've picked up the most points in the Premier League since the beginning of September. They have their first team now available to them. They're playing against a Liverpool team who have injuries themselves, who have started the season well, but in the Premier League, you know, they're only what? They're only a point clear of Arsenal in the league table at the moment. So this is going to be an opportunity for Mikel Arteta. And in my book, you know, Arteta had a lot of plaudits when he first came into the club and he won the FA Cup. He had a lot of plaudits at the back end of last season. In my view, right now is probably the time where I'm viewing Arteta in the most positive light, where it feels to me like there is a quite clear and significant uptick in terms of their performances and the way that he's getting his team to play. The only slight caveat to that, and the thing that concerns me, was how Leicester were able to create chances pretty much at will in that after Arsenal was so dominant in the first 20 minutes of that game, how Leicester grew back into it, given how Leicester's been fairly poor this season and how important Ramsdale was to keeping them at bay. But this is big. If they go and beat Liverpool, they'll do it on merit. But if they are turned over again by one of the teams who are genuine title challengers, then we've got to accept that Arsenal are going to be one of those sides who are able to flex their muscles against the league's weaker teams, but aren't on a par with those towards the top.
I mean, George making the fatal error there of looking at the gap between Arsenal and Liverpool across the whole league table. Just the 8-game table, George. 5 points clear they are of Liverpool, Arsenal. We don't focus on the whole thing. We just look at the last eight games. If you are interested in doing more reading upon how Arsenal and Arteta have steadied the ship, James McNicholas and Dave Ornstein actually wrote a piece on The Athletic a few weeks ago. It's well worth a read. Let's look at Liverpool a little bit now, Steve. Now, there was an episode on this very podcast feed earlier in the week where we kind of looked at Klopp's future, Michael Edwards, the sporting director's departure or impending departure at the end of the season. It feels like the front three is kind of, well, Salah's not, but it feels like the front three is coming a little bit towards the end of their cycle. It's been a great period for Liverpool, but you do kind of get that sense that there is going to be kind of a change. You know that change Alex Ferguson was always, very good at building a new side. Liverpool are going to have to do that, aren't they? And Klopp may be gone in 2024.
Yeah, it's a tough gig. You know, quite. I know they are third favourites to win it this year at 5-1. And I've, you know, progression since Klopp's been there from what, 2015, whether you finish United, you know, in the first season. And as a neutral, I just really enjoy watching Liverpool play, really enjoy, you know, the finals that he lost early on. He kicked on, they won the Champions League, they won the league. I know they didn't defend their title fantastically well, you know, last season, but they're back in amongst it this year as well. And it's going to be a tough gig for somebody, clearly, you know, with the story of Klopp's future and people and people leaving who make key decisions at the football club as well. So they are big shoes to fill. I don't really have an idea of, obviously people have talked about Steven Gerrard as well. And I'm always wary of speaking about Aston Villa too much when me and you are on, because it sounds like a local radio station.
Well, that's what we need, our own show on local radio. Let's make that happen.
So where Liverpool go, I don't know, but there is going to be a major overhaul. And I certainly don't have the answers. And have to see who does.
Yeah, do go back and check out that podcast from earlier on in the week, because it does go into great detail on what the future holds for Liverpool. Steve, how do you see this one playing out?
Well, George has mentioned referees in the previous game, and that's where I'm going to go, would you believe? Talking about referees, Michael Oliver takes charge of this game. He was the last referee to send off a player, actually, in this fixture at Anfield. Not a massive link there, probably 0.00001%, but anyway, he's only averaging 3.33 cards per game, which is a little bit disappointing because it's below average. But I have noticed that Lacazette has been putting himself around quite a bit when he's played. He's averaging 1.55 fouls per game. He's yet to be booked this season. So I'm going to go for the 5-1 Lacazette to be carded. Please, Mr. Oliver, can we have some more cards?
I mean, friend of The Athletic, Michael Oliver. I mean, I'm a right company man here, but there was a heartwarming piece about Michael Oliver and a young, budding referee who was in The Athletic earlier on in the week. Forgive me, because I cannot remember who wrote that piece, but I read it. It's a really, really heartwarming tale about a young referee and Michael Oliver being his hero. So could end up being Steve's hero by the end of the weekend.
One of the best Michael Oliver, yeah, I have to say.
Mikey. Steve loves him.
Ollie, to be Ollie. Fair.
Okay, sorry. Twister.
We're not talking about Ollie today. Come on.
No. Okay, yeah. Now we'll move on quickly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right then, before we continue with the podcast, please remember that if you are going to have a bet this weekend, make sure that you do so responsibly. George, you've got some helpful tips on how to make sure that we do just that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners of this podcast are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older. Please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose, and do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
Let's look then at Manchester City versus Everton, which is the Sunday 2 p.m. game, and we're going to focus on Everton because we haven't done very much on them in these preview shows so far this season. So it says here that Benitez is stifling assist king Luka Dean's creativity. 0 goals, 0 assists this season. Is that because he makes them more pragmatic, George Benitez? Is that just the Benitez way? But to stifle someone like him, who is one of their key men, doesn't really make much sense. They're not exactly free-flowing at the moment, are they?
No, they're not. And part of it will be because of the change in approach. I mean, the key thing is Rafa Benitez is a pragmatic manager, yes. But at the same time, he's a manager who thrives with getting a target man in the box and putting the ball on his head. And when Dominic Calvert-Lewin is back fit again, Luka Dean will be one of the key people to do that. So I think it's probably a case of Calvert-Lewin's injury. It's probably a case of some variance as well. When they have that target to aim at in the box, I'm sure Dean will be happier. And I'm sure part of it is form too. But I mean, there's no denying that Luka Dean has been a very consistent source of creativity from that left-hand side for the past three seasons at Everton, and that is stifled at the moment. They're going through a poor run of form. Benitez starting to come under some pressure as well, and you can see why, because the performances early on in the season were impressive. I mean, there's been a lot has been said, you know, and we mentioned this with Leicester in terms of being the victim of your own success. A lot was said early in the season about how impressive it was that they'd gone out and got Damari Gray and got Andros Townsend for pittance, and then got them performing at a level that we probably didn't expect to see both of them playing at. And, you know, looking at kind of the stat side of things to see if the three goals from each of them were overperforming their expected goals a little bit. You know, Damari Gray's got 2 expected goals so far this season. He's scored 3. Andros Townsend's 1.9. He's got 3 as well. So there's a little bit of overachievement there. But I think the realistic fact is that those players were overachieving. You know, these are two guys who, Damari Gray has a lot of talent, and it wouldn't be a massive surprise to see him build on his good start at Everton. But in Townsend's point specifically, this is a guy who's played a lot of Premier League football, who's not particularly young, who's basically, we know everything there is to know about Andros, and he's done this before in patches where he's looked like a very good player, and he is a very good player. But to anticipate that he's going to come into Everton and maintain that level of goal scoring form is probably just unsustainable. Realistically, these players are going to revert back to the mean, and so I do have a slight concern that Rafa Benitez and Everton have made slightly a rod for their own back here by having such a good start, because suddenly people are judging their performances against what they've already done this season. Whereas when you look at the team they're having to put out at the moment, the bare 1-11, given the injuries they've got, it doesn't look like a team who should be challenging to be in the top six, because they've got injuries. You know, Calvert-Lewin's a massive miss, Mina's a big miss, even Andre Gomez, who you know, I'm not a massive fan of, but plays a lot of football, and Doucouré is another doubt for Saturday's game. They're missing a lot of players, and suddenly you've got Richarlison playing as a lone striker. You've got Fabian Delph playing back in centre midfield. We had Anthony Gordon starting at right wing last time out against Spurs. They're thin in terms of what the options they've got and the quality they've got as well. So it's it feels to me like Everton, on paper at least, are basically a mid-table squad, and if Rafa can get more out of them than that, then he's probably doing a pretty good job. But I have a feeling he's going to be judged a little bit more harshly.
I'd forgotten until the last Premier League game where the Fabian Delph existed. I mean, for someone who betrayed me so heavily as an Aston Villa fan, I'd completely forgotten he was still a footballer. But I think he's made a little bit of a difference, actually. Yeah, I think he's made a little bit of a difference back in their midfield. But, you know, George hit the nail on the head there, Steve. Decore especially is a huge, huge miss, because he was a massive part of their good start, not just because Townsend and Gray were scoring the goals, but Decore was the heartbeat of that side, and him not being there is a massive problem for them.
You know, one of the players to thrive under the Benitez system, really, and the way that Rafa plays football, because possession... their bottom three, I think, for possession this season, 41.4% possession, you know, which is, pretty low. So Decore being a box-to-box midfielder was probably, you know, really enjoying that side of things, where we've talked about Lucas Digne, you know, clearly not. And as we've talked about, you know, Rafa is always going to be under scrutiny. I mean, the four games that they've won this season, Southampton, Burnley, Norwich, all at home, Brighton away, they'll be expected to win most of those games. And now they're five without a win, four goals scored in those. I think the fixtures coming up as well are really interesting. City, Brentford, Liverpool, Arsenal, Palace, Chelsea. So like we say there, you know, this is historically a fixture when David Moyes, since he's gone, they've won one game in the last 16 against the champions. I mean, I don't know if you remember the last game of last season, Ancelotti probably had his worst ever defeat in his career when he lost 5-0. Admittedly, he probably knew he was going to leave by then as well. So I think this is a good chance for, you know, to Rafa to get back on track in his Everton side. But they're a big old prize to finish in the top six. And with this squad, after the early season optimism, they're 8-1 to finish in the top six. I think mid-table is probably be in and around where they'll finish in this campaign.
Yeah, Man City away doesn't feel like the ideal fixture for them this weekend. What's your prediction, George?
I mean, it's tricky to find much value here, because I think City will win, but they're 1-7 to do so, and they're 11-10 to win by -2. So looking for the goal scorer markets, where, you know, with Pep Roulette, we're never entirely sure who's going to be playing in that false nine role, given they don't have a natural striker. But I think the likelihood is that Grealish will continue to sit out, given that he was dropped for the Manchester United game, given that he missed his England games due to illness. And I have a feeling he might line up with the same system as against Manchester United, with Bernardo Silva filling that false nine role, with Gundogan and De Bruyne either side of Rodri, and Foden and Jesus out wide of the three. And he is priced up as being the least likely to score out of basically all of them. You've got Jesus is 21-20, same price as Foden. De Bruyne is 6-5. You've got Gundogan is 7-4. And Bernardo Silva's 2-1. If that's right, and he lines up and he plays that position as he did against Manchester United, again, obviously scoring against Manchester United as well, had a chance to open the scoring too. That should be flipped, really. He shouldn't be the least likely of that group to score. He should probably be the most likely. So at 2-1, Bernardo to score any time in a game where City are very, very short to win.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. Listeners, we've got a very small favour to ask. We want to make sure we're making the very best football podcasts out there, so we need to know what you like and what we can do better. We've prepared a survey over at theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk, and if you complete it, you'll be entered into a prize draw to win one of three £100 Amazon shopping vouchers. Now, we're only after the feedback from UK listeners at this stage, and you can only win those Amazon shopping vouchers if you live in England, Scotland, Wales or Northern Ireland. So if that applies to you, then please head on over to theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk. That's theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk. Thanks.
Final game this week that we're going to preview is Sunday 4:30 kickoff, Spurs versus Leeds. Antonio Conte's first league home game, I think I'm correct in saying, and Oliver Skip is injured, George. So Conte's going to have to bring someone in from the cold to play in that central midfield area. Who is it going to be?
there are three candidates, really. I mean, we should point out as well that Højbjerg missed Denmark's two games due to injury in the international break. There seems to be a hope that that Højbjerg is going to be okay, that it's just a dead leg and he should be able to return for this one. But there is a possibility that Conte is going to have to pick two of these players to play in his midfield three. And Ndombele is the one that Spurs fans will want, given his ability, his ball-carrying ability, given that he seems to have played, more good games of Premier League football than most guys who can struggle to get starts for their team. He's a player that I love to watch. Harry Winks would be the most like-for-like change in for Skip, somebody who keeps it very simple, who he may not have the physical breaking up play capabilities of Skip, but he certainly is willing. You know, he tries to get stuck in, he tries to intercept balls and recycle it very quickly. Or Giovanni Lo Celso, the kind of forgotten man who was such a popular figure when he first came in at Spurs, clearly has bundles of technical ability. Again, a player who is very willing to get stuck in, is often quite rash off the ball, but maybe not quite as polished as Skip himself. So I think we're going to learn a lot about Conte in terms of who he chooses. Is he going to be willing to take the handbrake off and play a player in Ndombele? Or given Leeds' ability to play in transition, given their willingness to, you know, if he wants to play with Ndombele, he's going to have to hamstring Højbjerg and what he can do a fair bit. Would he go for somebody like Winks, who will sit in that role, not be particularly immobile, stay positionally sound, and you know, he's somebody who's happy to get his body on the line if need be. So I'm intrigued to see who it'll be. I reckon it probably will be Ndombele. Whether that's the right call, it'll be the popular one, but whether that's the right call, given the way that Leeds like to play, will be, it should make it a more interesting game for the neutral, that's for sure.
Yeah, Conte, I remember, he doesn't really take the popular view. I remember he used to leave Cesc Fabregas out a lot for Chelsea, didn't he, in that title winning season when they played three at the back. Fabregas used to always really be the full guy, so it'd be interesting to see what happens. Steve, Harry Kane was back amongst the goals on the international break, although, as I said earlier, I think we might have been amongst the goals against San Marino. He has been woeful for Tottenham. Every time I've watched Spurs, Harry Kane is like a ghost. I can't believe what I'm saying because he's such a sensational footballer. Now, Conte's taken the tomato ketchup away, but I've got a theory that maybe he's allowed ketchup on England due to, so taking a ketchup away might not necessarily be a good thing. We don't know. We just don't know, do we?
No, interesting. But I agree with you, Harry Kane. His demeanour, the way he's carried himself, it didn't look right. But I know he's only got one goal in the league. He's nearly got 20, though, in all competitions. Admittedly, a lot of those, you know, for England. But he has been scoring in other competitions. And I suppose, I know they didn't have a shot on target. I think it was away at Everton. But it seemed to be playing more central, more advanced than he has been previously. Admittedly, he wasn't as advanced as Reguilon, who seemed to be playing well, high up, you know, left winger, basically. And this is such an easy narrative that when managers take over at football clubs, say, oh yeah, I'm not impressed with the fitness levels here. We'll have to raise it a little bit. And maybe it's a little bit of that. We'll see. You know, Conte will certainly, they won't be wanting for that. Also, from a betting point of view, Dan, he's only 16-1 to finish as the top goal scorer yet again in this division. 16-1. He's got one goal this season. Mo Salah's got 10, right? And we're only 16-1. I think we're a little bit bigger about him getting 25 or more. 25-1, in fact. Some people will argue, well, what about the unders price? Well, he's even money to score 15 or fewer. So maybe that could be the way to go. I can see George's brain working it out now where the value is in the Harry Kane market. And of course, he knows how to score at international level as well. So he is only 8-1 to finish as the top goal scorer at the 2022 World Cup as well. So clear there's goals in there. You know, if he hits the ground running starting this weekend, then we'll even be cutting that 16-1. But it does feel to me to be on the short side.
Yeah, just to remind you, if you put £10 on Harry Kane to finish top goal scorer in the Premier League, that's £10 that you've lost. That's gone. So yeah, I wouldn't do that. George, there's a kind of a debate around Kane and Rooney now of who's been the better player for England. I think there's actually only one answer to this, but where do you stand?
I mean, for England, I'd say the answer's got to be Kane, given what has been achieved with him as captain, effectively. Mm-hmm. We got to a semi-final of a World Cup with Kane winning the Golden Boot. We got to the final of the Euros with Kane scoring goals as well. So there seems little doubt in my mind, even though I'm a massive Wayne Rooney fan. I think often it is forgotten just how good he was, not just as a goal scorer, but as a footballer for both Manchester United and England. He is, if it's possible, in my view, by some of the some of the masses may be underrated in terms of what Wayne Rooney did in a football shirt, possibly because his ability may be waned earlier in his career, no pun intended, than most players in that position. But yeah, I think what Kane has done and what Kane will continue to do, because anyone who writes Kane off is doing so way, way too early on. He's always had these spells, often early on in the season, where he looks out of sorts. You know, I was at the Hungary game and it was one of the worst live performances from an elite footballer that I've ever seen. You know, having watched Harry Kane in Russia, having watched him in the summer as well, that performance against Hungary was a player completely out of sorts against fairly poor opposition. So for him to bounce back the way he did, it doesn't matter who it's against. It doesn't matter. The way that he bounced back, the way that he was able to just be a completely different footballer, will set him in much better stall here. And you know, Antonio Conte has a magic touch with strikers. It's not going to be too long before Kane starts scoring. For those who are interested in backing the 15 or under at even money, I mean, it probably is the value, but I would be fairly concerned that that you're going to be looking fairly good. And knowing Harry Kane, he makes hay in May and April. So that's always the way where he you know, he racks them up when maybe towards the end of the season when things aren't going too well.
Interesting. So that's one vote for Harry Kane over Wayne Rooney, I think, is the conclusion I've come to from you there, George. I think just two votes because of me, because I just think, you know, what he's done in the tournaments. I don't think Rooney's exceptional record for England, great player for England, but in the tournaments, I don't think he ever did it. Steve's showing me that his hand is up as well. So that's three votes for Harry Kane over Rooney for England. So there you go. That absolutely settles it. No one needs to ask that question anymore. Steve, Bielsa, Leeds. Still a bit of a funny one. Funny to watch, can't quite work them out. Is his position as strong as it was in the summer? Because if you think Watford, Norwich, Newcastle, Watford and Villa have all changed managers, Leeds, it's a bit of a funny one, because you would never trust him to stick around long term anyway, would you?
No, you wouldn't. But it's going to be on his terms when he leaves Leeds, yeah. Surely. I mean, you can't see Leeds just, we're getting rid of Bielsa. I personally, you know, don't see that. Speaking to the Leeds fans that went to the Leicester game, I think there was a noticeable improvement there. The balance brought to the side by Forshaw being in. I know we talked about Forshaw before. I know it's a small squad and, you know, they were hit by injuries, of course, COVID, recovery time from COVID as well. Yeah, Forshaw and Phillips in midfield. We're all waiting for Bamford to come back as well. Dan James played as a nine against Leicester. So he's still finding his feet there. I think Leeds won't be in any sort of relegation trouble whatsoever. I'd be more interested in backing the 7-2 Leeds to finish in the top half than backing Leeds to go down or around the 5-1 mark. The same price as Villa, Dan, incidentally. So you've got Norwich at 1-6. Yeah, I'm not mentioning Villa too much this time. Watford at 4-7, Newcastle at evens, Burnley at 6-5. And the hipster's choice, Brentford, just sneaking into relegation markets now at 7-2 as well. So Leeds United will be fine, in my opinion, and I see them pushing towards the top half. I talked about Reguilon earlier, and he had two shots in the box against Everton. He was the most advanced Spurs player at Goodison, 26 touches in the final third, more than Luca Dean, by the way. 16 passes received in the final third, and he's going to be flourishing under Conte, I think we know that. So I'm going to back him to score at any time at a double-figure price.
Steve there, trying to make sure that Harry Kane golden boot bet wasn't the worst bet on this week's podcast, and he's finishing off on a high. Just before we go, can I just remind you that you can sign up to The Athletic at the moment for just £3.33 a month. To take advantage of that offer, head to theathletic.com/footballpod. My thanks to Stevie and Georgie, and of course all you for listening as well. Remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss a show. Mark Chapman, David Ornstein and company are back on this feed on Monday. You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. Enjoy all the football and have a great weekend.
The Athletic.